U.S. President Donald Trump facing impeachment this week sparred Monday with House Democrats who accused him of multiple federal crimes and the abuse of the presidency. AP's Ed Donahue reports.
Upon his return from Ukraine, Giuliani met with the president. What was said?
No, not too much, but he's a very great crime fighter.
He called Rudy Giuliani very smart.
He sees all of the hoax that happens when they talk about impeachment hoax or the Russian collusion delusion.
With the impeachment vote looming, moderate Democrats like Utah's Ben McAdams are saying how they will vote.
I will vote yes.
He's hoping the president will be censured.
Instead of putting the country through a divisive and lengthy Senate impeachment trial with a predetermined outcome of dismissal.
But McAdams said what the president did was wrong. Ed Donahue, Washington.
Boeing is suspending production of its 737 MAX in January as it continues to struggle with the fallout from two deadly crashes that grounded the jets back in March. AP's Mike Hempen has that story.
The Wall Street Journal reports the company could cut production of the MAX or even end it altogether. The newspaper says Boeing's board began meeting over the weekend to consider its options. And according to people not identified, the company is viewing production cuts as a viable option. The Journal reports the shift occurred after U.S. regulators told Boeing that its timetable for the return of the MAX was unrealistic. Recently, Boeing said it expected the FAA to permit shipments of new MAX jets this month. I'm Mike Hempen.
Local governments across the U.S. Midwest and Northeast are urging drivers to stay off the roads as a second major storm brought ice and wintry mix to areas from Kansas to New Hampshire. At least 11 people have died in weather-related vehicle crashes. For more news, please join us, voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. In Afghanistan, U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham said a U.S. troop drawdown is coming. We get more on that story from the AP's Charles de Ledesma.
Speaking from the Afghan capital, Kabul, Graham said the president could reduce troops to 8,600, down from the current 12,000, adding Afghanistan's national security forces are ready to defend their country. Graham added America's withdrawal from Afghanistan has to be condition-based, and the Taliban have to be held to the promises they make during peace talks. Graham has opposed a full U.S. troop withdrawal from Afghanistan. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Monday marked 75 years since the start of one of World War II's pivotal battles. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The snow-covered Ardennes Forest shook.
Here along what was the Western Front, Defense Secretary Mark Esper is marking Germany's last major counteroffensive in 1944, 6 months after D-Day, the Battle of the Bulge.
American troops fought and forged an incredible victory that assured Hitler's defeat.
In a cold, soaking rain, veteran Malcolm Buck Marsh Jr. told a crowd here at the memorial to Americans killed in the battle that the weather was worse then. Freezing temperatures, blinding snow. Allies won the battle and the war. Marsh would rather none of it happened again.
Pray for world peace.
Sagar Magani with the Defense Secretary, Bastogne, Belgium.
Authorities at the U.S. Military Academy and U.S. Naval Academy are investigating hand gestures made during the Army-Navy football game over the weekend. The AP's Mike Gracia has more on the story.
The U.S. Military Academy and the U.S. Naval Academy say officers have been appointed to investigate motivations behind hand signals flashed by some cadets and midshipmen during last Saturday's Army-Navy football game in Philadelphia. During the TV broadcast, some West Point cadets and Naval Academy midshipmen flashed what looked like a sideways OK finger gesture. Photos and clips of the gestures went viral on social media. Some Twitter users condemned the gesture as a white power sign. Others defended it as the gotcha or circle game that's popular with children. Mike Gracia, Washington.
The wife of Zimbabwe's vice president is charged with attempting to kill her husband. A magistrate on Monday ordered Mary Chiwenga, a former model and wife of Vice President Constantino Chiwenga, remain in custody pending a bail hearing. She's accused of trying to deny her husband medical care, insisting that he stay at a hotel instead of a hospital when he was flown to South Africa for medical treatment back in July. She's also charged with money laundering and fraud amid reports of their troubled marriage, allegedly. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN holds a global refugee forum as the private sector commits money for refugee support.
Doing this through supporting 10,000 educators and 170,000 caregivers, all of whom are going to receive training and professional development on how to engage in learning through play with children who find themselves in these adverse circumstances.
John Godwin is the CEO of the LEGO Foundation. Ugandans weigh in on President Museveni's latest cabinet reshuffle. Zimbabwe Vice President's wife is charged with attempting to kill her husband. Gambians took to the streets on Monday to demand President Barrow step down. And Zambia asked the U.S. to recall its ambassador to Zambia.
It was unprecedented that an ambassador or diplomat really criticized the judgment. And apart from criticizing the judgment, criticized the whole Zambian governance system.
Isaac Chipembe is the Zambian presidential spokesperson. And Guinea-Bissau have held a hackathon. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. More than 100 companies and foundations are committing their time, money, and business acumen to help many of the world's 25 million refugees find jobs, get an education, and become contributing members of their countries of exile. Representatives of these organizations are among more than 2,000 representatives from all sectors of society attending the first ever Global Refugee Forum. Lisa Schlein reports from the meeting in Geneva.
The forum has gotten off to a good start. The UN Refugee Agency reports that more than 30 organizations, including multinationals and small and medium-sized enterprises, have pledged more than $250 million to help transform the lives of refugees and the communities hosting them. When the refugee crisis hit Europe in 2016, multinational retailer IKEA committed itself to providing employment to many of the refugees who had no means of support. Tolga Onsu, CEO of IKEA's Inca Group, says his organization pledges to scale up this program. He says IKEA plans to support 2,500 refugees through job training and language skills in 300 of its stores in 30 countries by 2022. He says this action will help the refugees and the company's bottom line.
It is good business to do good, and we at IKEA have the fortune to think in generations. Say, there is another part where we are committing to do, and that is to participate in changing the narrative in the societies around refugees. We want this narrative to be a positive narrative.
The Vodafone Foundation runs high-quality education programs for refugee children in camps in Kenya, Tanzania, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. It says it plans to expand these programs to encompass more than 500,000 young refugees in new countries by 2025. The LEGO Foundation also values the opportunities education offers refugee children. Its CEO, John Goodwin, says this year the foundation is awarding $100 million to a consortium led by the International Rescue Committee to help host governments improve the educational outcomes for 800,000 pre-primary and primary school children living in refugee settings in East Africa.
We'll be doing this through supporting 10,000 educators and 170,000 caregivers, all of whom are going to receive training and professional development on how to engage in learning through play with children who find themselves in these adverse circumstances.
Goodwin says the LEGO Foundation is focusing on East Africa because of the region's largely forgotten long-standing refugee crisis. He says many people there have been displaced for upwards of 30 years, and his organization wants to help children in this environment have a better start in life. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Zambian President Edgar Lungu has officially petitioned the U.S. government to recall the U.S. ambassador to Zambia. Presidential spokesperson Isaac Chipampe says Ambassador Daniel Fort behaved unethically by criticizing the Zambian government. This after a court jailed two men accused of engaging in homosexual relations. According to local media reports, Zambia's constitution is against same-sex partnerships, but critics say the government appears to be going after the ambassador on LGBT issues, but failed to respond when a top American envoy raised concerns about corruption. Presidential spokesman Chipampe tells viewers Peter Clotty that the Zambian government is waiting for a response from Washington.
It has been a very unprecedented issue here in this country, and we are actually surprised that this story has prolonged, because the president hasn't said much in terms of his disappointment, but he's very disappointed with the ambassador. Why is he disappointed? Because there was a story in one of these new social media outlets where the ambassador was quoted as being disappointed with a case in this part of the world, a case which was to do with homosexuality. Now, what was surprising was that the American ambassador took it upon himself to criticize the judgment, and it was unprecedented that an ambassador or diplomat really criticized the judgment, and apart from criticizing the judgment, criticized the whole Zambian governance system.
Has the president officially, through the Minister of Foreign Affairs, petitioned the U.S. administration for the recall of the ambassador?
The Zambian government has issued a demarche, which is a complaint to the American government that we had been criticized unjustly by the ambassador. As a government, we have been waiting for the American government to respond.
Some critics of the government are saying that the government was very quick and sharp to criticize the ambassador when he talks about LGBT issues. But when the same ambassador right. talked about issues of corruption and all that, the government was silent and has done nothing about it. How do you answer to such criticisms from opponents of the government?
Well, people should be specific. If you want to attack government on governance, you attack government on governance. You can't be inconsistent in such a manner that you are talking about gender issues or issues to do with minorities. You talk about minorities, but you cannot criticize anybody or government on minorities. Then suddenly you drift into corruption. Then suddenly you drift into how you haven't been given an opportunity to meet the president. Then you're just fishing. That's what the president has been talking about. If the ambassador Foot really had an issue with the Zambian government on corruption, he should have met the president. And the president has been saying, when did I stop the ambassador from meeting me? I suppose that even his president, he doesn't support Sodom. But he uses this opportunity, which is very contrary to the issues of corruption. What is corruption about Sodom? And it's very sad, because I can tell you, the Zambian ambassador, can he attack Trump in America? Can he attack Trump in America? The Zambian ambassador, within 48 hours, he will be back in Zambia. So that's what we are talking about. We're saying, let's follow etiquette. What has happened for etiquette? These people are trained as ambassadors, and now they are saying, I cannot meet the Zambian permanent secretary because it's too soon. When did the ambassador become so senior that he cannot meet an African permanent secretary?
Isaac Chipampe is the Zambian presidential spokesperson. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from Livingstone, Zambia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 17, Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. A spokesman for Ugandan parliamentarian Robert Chakulai's People Power Movement says this week's cabinet reshuffle by President Yoweri Museveni was carried out to reward those who played a key role in changing the constitution in 2017 to remove age limit. The change paved the way for Mr. Museveni in power since 1986 to once again contest for the presidency in 2021. The government says the cabinet shakeup is intended to strengthen President Museveni's hand in his fight against corruption. Bobby Wine's People Power Movement spokesman, Joe Senyonyi, says the new appointments are part of a patronage system in Uganda where a cabinet positions are handed out not based on merit, but rather because of what those appointed have done for the president.
This cabinet shuffle was expected, especially as it is. Why? Because there are people who championed the amendment of our constitution to remove the presidential age limit such that Mr. Museveni can rule until he dies. And Mr. Museveni had to reward them. And without a doubt, they did all that they did well, knowing there was a reward coming. And we have seen a number of them being awarded with ministerial positions. The person that championed this, Honorable Rafael Majezi, Jackson Kafuzi, and a couple of others. So they've really been rewarded. You know, our politics is full of patronage. They scratch my back, I scratch yours. So those that championed this, they knew that time was going to come and Mr. Museveni was going to reward them, which is very sad because our country then is not run as a meritocracy where people are hired on merit because they are skilled and can deliver. They are hired because of something they have done for the big man, for the powers that be.
As you know, it's a prerogative of the president to change his cabinet. And I think one reading was that the president did so as a way of fighting corruption and putting in place competent people. But you are suggesting that this cabinet reshuffle is intended for the re-election of the president in 2021.
Like I'm saying, it was really a reward for those that championed the amendment of our constitution. So the whole talk about, this reshuffle is meant to fight corruption, I don't see how that happens because the people he has reappointed, these are the people that he bribed with millions of shillings to amend our constitution, and they're the same ones that he's rewarding with this position. So I don't see how corruption fights corruption. It just doesn't make sense to me, really. But like I'm saying, it's patronage politics. That's the way, unfortunately, our leaders do things. And little wonder, we never move. We never move because we don't hire people because they are competent, because they are skilled. Okay, the president has people, when you look at cabinet, it has his friends, relatives, in-laws, and then, of course, those who have done him favors, okay? Which is unfortunate because if your cabinet is made up of that kind of people, who suffers at the end of the day, it is we, the citizens, who pay taxes and expect service delivery. But services don't get delivered. Why? Because these people are not competent enough to deliver these services. They're not there for the benefit of the citizen. They're there for the benefit of the emperor, the one that appointed them.
Looking at the faces of the new cabinet, is the president bringing on younger people now?
So there's been some young people that have been brought on board. But again, sadly, like we are saying, the young people being brought on board are not those who are skilled and qualified and competent. It is those that will do political errands for the president as opposed to deliver services for the people. But the president has also largely retained very old people, elderly people within cabinet, our vice president, who is in his late 70s, first deputy prime minister, who is in his 80s, second deputy prime minister in his 80s, and a couple of other senior ministers, our finance minister in his 70s. So the president really is keeping elderly people around him so that he has company. He's an elderly man himself. Now, look, we have nothing against elderly people. But you see, these are folks who can even hardly move on their own. They can hardly stay awake for an hour straight. And then you expect them to run a 21st century cabinet. It's difficult. You know, they just cannot meet the 21st needs of a country like ours. They should be somewhere resting, taking care of their great-grandchildren, and not running around trying to fix government challenges. They just are not able to, for heaven's sake. Their point of satiety was exceeded a long time ago.
The Honorable Bobby Wine was supposed to make a nationwide tour. Has he started now?
We wrote to the Electoral Commission and to police, as the law does require. If somebody aspires to become president, you write notifying the EC, the Electoral Commission, and police. So you can get to do countrywide consultations, move across the country, because we like to observe the law. And they've not responded. They are mandated to respond to us before we move, because the law doesn't say you first get a response from them before you move, because the law doesn't say ask for permission. It says notify them. And so we write to notify them. We write notifying police, hoping they'll provide for us security. Because as people power, we don't have a police force of our own. We've got to depend on that which we pay with our taxpayer money to provide security. And of course, our call to police is that, look, the way we have observed the law by writing, as the law provides, observe the law. Don't come to disrupt our activities and beat up people and tear gas them and maim them. That's come to provide security. So we are hoping they will have the law.
Joel Senyonyi is the spokesman for Ugandan parliamentarian Bobi Wine's People Power Movement. He was speaking with us from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Zimbabwe Vice President Constantino Chiwenga's wife has been remanded in custody by a Harare magistrate on charges of attempting to kill her husband while he was in hospital, forging a marriage certificate and money laundering. Mary Chiwenga, who was arrested by the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission on Saturday, faces a lengthy prison term if found guilty. The vice president and Mary Chiwenga are divorcing. The state claims that Mrs. Chiwenga tried to kill her husband when she visited him at a South African hospital, where she allegedly forcibly removed an intravenous given set, which were being used by the then helpless former army general. Mrs. Chiwenga's attorney refused any comment on the issue. Human rights lawyer Mashubana Mbe urged the state to conduct a fair trial in this high-profile case involving the Zimbabwe vice president.
If one has an offense preferred against them, usually it's the police who then record statements from that person, that is finding out what the response or the attitude towards the charge or the charges of the person. Then the constitution requires that the person should be brought to court within 48 hours of their arrest. So I think this is what happened. And she appeared in court because the offense of attempted murder is what we call a third sexual offense, meaning that it is one of those serious offenses if you're looking at the Criminal Precedent Evidence Act. Uh-huh. So what it means is that it is an offense which only the High Court can deal with insofar as the bail application is concerned. So when you appear in court, you are just being brought in for a routine remand because that court then does not have, the Massive Court does not have the jurisdiction to entertain the bail application unless, of course, the Attorney General has consented that that court should have jurisdiction. So I think that is what happened. So what she should do is then to proceed to file an application in the High Court in respect of the matter charge. In respect of the other offenses, she is at liberty to place before that court where she has appeared either a written application or an oral application through her attorneys for bail. That court will determine those charges. Mm-hmm. But perhaps for convenience, they will file all those, a single application encompassing all the charges that she's facing.
Mr. Ngobe, your last word in terms of Mrs. Chiwenga's chances of being granted bail?
Look, the constitution says everyone is presumed innocent until they are proven guilty. That's the overriding principle when it comes to bail matters. Obviously, I'm not privy to, you know, the issues that are involved. But from what we have seen, I think we have had more serious cases. People have appeared in court on murder charges, on treason charges, they've been admitted to bail. So all the court needs to do is to put in place appropriate conditions to ensure that the accused person does attend court.
Mashubana Mbe is a human rights lawyer. He was speaking with Gabe Dube of U.S. Zimbabwe Service. Gambians took to the streets on Monday to demand President Adama Barrow stepped down before January 19, 2020. The protesters are also demanding what they call fresh, credible and transparent elections to be held before September 2020. They made the demands in a petition presented to President Barrow through a representative of his government. Pandera Umbaya reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
I came here because of Barrow. He promised us he's going to control until 3 years. So now it's 3 years now. So he have to give power.
The voices of the 3 years journal protesters, thousands of protesters converged along the busy Serekunda Banjul Highway on Monday to call on President Adama Barrow to step down from power. The protesters want Barrow to respect the 3 years transitional government he promised to the Gambian voters, failure of which they are threatening to organize another protest march in the new year. Some of the protesters flew from abroad to join their colleagues in the Gambia. Barrow has been accused of betraying the wishes and aspirations of the Gambian people. The protesters had branded Barrow's 3-year rule as a total failure. They said cost of living is on the increase while the country's health sector was in disarray. They also accused the regime of neglecting the plight of Gambian youths, many of whom they said are dying because of the backward journey to Europe. The protest march was also characterized by singing and the chanting of anti-Boro government sentiments. Yanko Badabo is a Gambian lawyer. He is among the organizers of the protest march.
Everyone who is here today should be able to tell President Barrow, you must hear your people. You must listen. Forget about the cronies around him at State House. Be very careful of them. Because when the people are holding him accountable, they will all run, dissipate into the air like a tin air.
Dabo has warned Barrow to avoid any attempt to walk away from his promise of running a three-year transitional government.
If Barrow should relinquish, he would have the grace and honor and the dignity of his people. If he should continue, he would lack the respect, the credibility, and there will be even more defiance against him. And if he suppresses, he will find himself at The Hague.
For now, Dabo and his group said they will accord Barrow the opportunity to review their petition. They want Barrow not to underrate the strength of their three-year movement group.
People like this, there is no force Barrow has that can stop us from marching to Banjul. If we so desire, we will walk straight to State House and pull Adama Barrow out and take him out.
The protesters have called on Barrow to amend Section 46 of the Constitution and organize elections in September of 2020. They said Barrow should also not avail himself as a presidential candidate in the proposed elections. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Youth in Guinea-Bissau held a hackathon last week to see how local IT professionals would solve problems in the country, ranging from agriculture to e-governance and more. Adulai Barry, who helped run the event, talked to Ricky Stryak about some of the solutions the hackers came up with to address local needs.
And the hackathon propose was to put young professional IT in the same place to hack some challenges that Guinea-Bissau facing by using technology.
What were some of those challenges, Abdoulaye?
Yeah, it's in different topics. It's in agriculture, e-governance, health, education, and also one of the challenges was in infrastructure or transportation. We had 8 groups working in different challenges. At the end, we selected 3 winners. One of them was a project that will help because, maybe Guinea-Bissau don't have a centralized database for healthcare. Like if you have some issues, you go to the hospital, like, for example, in the regions, the doctor will not have your clinic history. Like he don't have any information recorded about you. He have to repeat everything, to do every consultations. If you don't have are able to talk or to explain anything, he can't have any information about you. So one of the solutions we have during the hackathon is to create a database to centralize every patient around the country. It's a centralized database that will record the information of every patient in different hospitals around the country.
How is the solution specifically geared toward Guinea-Bissau, and how would it be implemented?
So basically, they will use 3 type of solution. The first one going to be a web platform. The web platform that will be used by different hospitals and clinics where they have access to internet. The second solution going to be a USSD. So it's offline platform that by the telco company's API, they will use it. It's a radio solution that will not use internet data. So
that was Adulai Barry, co-founder of InnovaLab. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Guinea-Bissau's capital, Bissau. That is it for this Tuesday, December 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jamie Cook, I am James Botte in Washington, wishing you a very, very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa,
Nnamdi Kanu, the leader of the indigenous people of Biafra, talks about the efforts and challenges to secede from Nigeria. The struggle for independence on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Thank you.